It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback Eli Manning.
You know, it's my job to do my job as best I can, but to be a good teammate. You know, I've always been great in the quarterback room, helping everybody out.
Former LSU and Saints star wide receiver Devery Henderson.
To get that opportunity, man, and get that call on draft day for seeing that 504 number, it was something else, man. When I got that call, man, it was real humbling, and you know, being able to play for Maine State and be still close to home.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW, that's better known as the Stadium Network, 32.1. Free, over-the-air, 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you'd like to give us a call today, I want to talk LSU, Cajuns, Saints, Pels, or more. Pick up the phone, dial the ARCO Equipment Hotline 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We got two guests lined up for today's show at 8:32. Our friend from Tiger Rag, Tyler Nunez, will be joining us talking all things LSU. At 7:32, our boy Barry Herstis from the Saints News Network in Big Easy Magazine will join us. Training camp officially began yesterday. Players reported. Mickey Loomis, Sean Payton spoke to the media, and then they'll get to it out there at the practice facility, training facility in Metairie today. And that's where I want to lead off with today's show. It is time for the season. It's time for the Saints. Woo! All that long off season. The heartbreak in the NFC Championship game. Having to live with that. Having to live with the game being robbed from them. Going through the draft. Going through free agency. Chip on the shoulder. Waiting. Focused. Just can't wait to get back onto the field. And here it is. All the voluntary workouts, done. All that other stuff, done. Now it's time for the nitty-gritty. Training camp begins today out there at the practice facility in Metairie. Hell, the Hall of Fame game is next Thursday already. Yeah, the Hall of Fame game is next Thursday. The NFL season will be here in no time at all. Both Sean Payton and Mickey Loomis addressed the media yesterday as players were reporting. The vets, rookies were already there. Vets were reporting yesterday. And both Loomis and Payton addressed the media and talked about a slew of different things. Sean Payton had this to say about their top draft pick from a year ago. Remember, Marcus Davenport, they traded up. They traded away future picks to get the pass rusher out of UTSA. He started to come on, but then had an injury, had to be derailed, had to be shut down. They expect big things out of him in year number two. This is what Sean Payton had to say about their emerging young pass-rushing star.
Yeah, he's doing well. We haven't been in pads yet, you know, so it's hard to say from the end, but he's healthy. And we saw how he played when he was healthy last year. And so I'm sure he's excited and looking forward to it.
That's what Sean Payton had to say about Marcus Davenport, their young, emerging, pass-rushing defensive end. Sean Payton also had to say about another competition that's going to be out there during camp that you're going to keep an eye on. We know about wide receiver. We'll get to that. But center, that's going to be a big battle during camp. Someone's got to step up and replace Max Unger, the Pro Bowl, Super Bowl winning center. He won a Super Bowl with the Seattle Seahawks. He provided great leadership, and he made those guards beside him so much better. They took the young man out of Texas A&M, Eric McCoy, in the second round. That was their first draft pick this year. They also signed Easton away from the Minnesota Vikings. He's coming off a year where he was injured, but he's played guard and center in the past. Sean Payton talked about that battle at center for training camp.
Yeah, both those guys are going to get a lot of work there. Obviously, Nick's played that position. He's also played guard. You know, those guys will be plenty of reps for those players for us to get a good evaluation on, you know, the veteran player and the young player. But I think, you know, look, it's always difficult replacing a talented player and someone like Max, who's also a real good leader. But I think that, you know, we've got two guys that have played that position, you know, pretty well.
You can tell that he's confident about what they have there at the center position. I think the Saints are going to be happy regardless of who takes that spot. I think they'd like to see McCoy earn the job during camp, but they know that he's going to be their center for the future. So even if he doesn't start the season, is not quite ready to take over as a starter as a rookie, he will be soon enough. Sean Payton also talked about two new additions. In the last couple days, they've added veteran defensive tackle Ziggy Hood and a veteran linebacker in Josh Barden. Sean Payton talked about both of those late additions right before the start of camp.
Well, with Josh, it was you know, he's been a real good special teams player, and so his physical was good. Ziggy's been a very consistent player. So, you know, it's not unusual for us to have a workout like that, you know, prior to camp. Coaches are back in the office. And so we brought in a handful of different positions to kind of update. Even if a player's not signed, you can at least update the grade relative to what kind of shape he's in. You know, is he, you know, we'll have a whole ready list once you get into the start of the season. If there's an injury, you know, you kind of know here are the two or three players that, you know, quite honestly, we could be calling on a Sunday after the game to organize a flight in. And so you're gathering the information all the time. And, yeah, these guys fit some specific areas, you know, that we thought were important.
Both were signed to add depth. Linebacking core, as Les East referred to our friend from CrescentCitySports.com yesterday on the show, stated that, you know, linebackers, they're solid, but depth, also special teams. You've heard this over and over again. This focus on special teams. They signed talented special teams guys, brought back guys like Justin Hardy and others, but they've made a conscious effort to improve the special teams. And this is, once again, even right before camp, they're trying it again. A big question mark, of course, is who's going to line up and become another one of those star wide receivers? You got maybe one of the top three wide receivers in the league and Michael Thomas. Ted Ginn Jr. can still be a valuable slot guy, even though he's older now. You showed some flashes from the likes of Kirkwood, the undrafted rookie last year, as well as the third-round draft pick, Tre'Quan Smith, out of UCF. But then there's Cam Meredith. And here's a guy who was injury-prone in Chicago. The Saints got him as a restricted free agent, had to give up a pick to do so. He was never a factor last year. He got injured again, injured himself in a different fashion, and saw limited playing time and wasn't necessarily effective. So there's a logjam there for the Saints on who's going to be the number three, number four, number five wide receivers. And there's been a lot of talk about Cam Meredith maybe being the odd man out. Sean Payton talked about how important this training camp is for the Saints wide receiver?
Yeah, listen, he completed the conditioning test. This will be an important camp for him. You know, I'm sure he's excited. You know, so the key is getting the work in that he's going to have an opportunity to. And, you know, and then there's that balance of being smart. You know, there's a handful of players that are coming into training camp, you know, full. And yet we got to be smart as we, you know, bring them back to that workload.
How did you guys do in conditioning?
They did pretty well. So there's a new surface in there, you know, new field turf surface, which can be a little sticky, so the sleds were a little bit slower. But, it was good. I was pleased. I thought they did a really good job.
Sean Payton also talked about a fan favorite. Is he a quarterback? Is he a running back? Is he a wide receiver? Does he block kicks on special teams? The Swiss Army knife of the team, fan favorite Taysom Hill. This is what the head coach of the New Orleans Saints had to say about his versatile player.
Well, I think to answer your question, I think you're constantly looking at ideas that would suit, you know, his skill set. He's someone that obviously runs well. He's a tremendous blocker and loves playing football. And I think that he's a big part of what we do as a team. He's got versatility. I mean, for a guy to be able to play in all the kicking game snaps, I don't know how many snaps he averaged on offense, but I know there's been games in the 20s. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, throughout this preseason and then as you get into the regular season, you know, a lot of it's opponent driven. But he's been fun to work with.
Sean Payton also discussed the challenges and the importance of the depth on the roster and how to manage that properly and how to not go overboard in one direction, like have 18 different wide receivers and only six linemen, right? There's a science. There's a method behind the madness on managing the roster, what guys to cut, what guys to bring in, what guys to give a second chance to, what guys not to. He discussed about managing the depth of the Saints roster.
Well, I think, look, that's the question as you start camp, you know, relative to, you know, the roster, the right group of guys, and then this team will be different than last year's team or the year before. And I think that, you know, I think historically, and I don't think this will ever change, but that competition is what can bring out the best in an individual.
And speaking of individuals, Sheldon Rankins was placed on the physically unable to perform list. He's their young emerging star defensive tackle. It's one of the reasons why this week they signed Ziggy Hood, the former first-round draft pick and veteran defensive lineman, to give themselves some needed depth. Sean Payton tried to provide an update, but he really doesn't have any on where Sheldon Rankins is right now in his recovery.
No, I won't, because that'll lead to updates every week and then every Tuesday. And so he's rehabbing, and, you know, hopefully I know he's on schedule. New precedents here right in the middle of July, and then I'll be upset for the whole year.
He'll be upset the whole year. Because the members of the media will constantly be asking him, hey, Coach, how's Sheldon doing? Hey, Coach, where do we go? And finally, Sean Payton discussed how he and his staff, and in a bigger regard, the front office, manage the reps. Not only do you have to manage the roster depth, but you also have to manage the reps throughout training camp.
We've been doing that for probably the last 3 years. So it'll continue, you know, with a practice plan, a throwing plan, but in a similar fashion, different position. There's a handful of players that will have a whole month laid out. You know, Teron, Cam, you know, depending on the player, Teddy Ginn, you know, it's just trying to be smart.
Just trying to be smart. because you got to make sure you can't win the season during training camp, but if you don't manage your roster properly and you don't manage your personnel, you could lose a guy that could help you win a championship and that could derail your season. We see it happen all the time. Freak injuries happen during training camp. Overwork a guy, cut a guy, and then he signs with someone else, and then boom, he's a superstar. It happens. So you got to be smart about it. The big storyline, though, coming out yesterday with Saints reporting for training camp was the fact that one of them was not there. You've probably heard about it a little bit, but we'll talk more about that coming up. About can't guard Mike. He was a no-show. What did Coach Sean Payton have to say? What did GM Mickey Loomis had to say? And honestly, is this even a big deal? I'll give you a tease.
Not really.
But we'll talk more about that after we pay a few bills. Right here on RP3 and Company. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. That's Sean Payton talking about how he's confident that a deal will be worked out between his star elite wide receiver, Michael Thomas, who's still on his rookie deal, about to enter his last year of his rookie contract with the New Orleans Saints, which he has outplayed from day one. He wants $20 million a year. Reports have said that. Other reports have indicated that the Saints are right now really only offering 18 to 19. So they're about $1 million to $1.5 million apart. And that seems like a lot. There's also reports that Michael Thomas and his agent, his team, are keeping an eye on what happens in Atlanta with Julio Jones and the Falcons. Because apparently he's renegotiating his deal. And I think whatever Julio gets, which a lot of reports are saying that's going to happen today, could be how this deal gets done with the Saints and Michael Thomas. Because he's going to look to that in his team. And let's say Julio says, okay, Atlanta, I want to be paid $19 million a year. Well, then Michael Thomas would probably be willing to take $19.1 million a year or $19.2 million a year. That's how these things work. You just want the title of being the highest paid wide receiver, even if it's, you know, an extra $500. That's all that really matters. I think the deal gets done between Thomas and the Saints. I don't think it'll take that long. I think once the Julio Jones renegotiations with the Falcons, that is completed, which is expected to be today or this weekend. You'll see the Thomas deal with the Saints be completed soon. But he was a no-show at training camp. This is standard operating procedure for a player if they're trying to renegotiate a contract. Michael Thomas is not the only one that's doing this.
That's a topic for a whole other topic of discussion that maybe we can get to at some point. But it's kind of standard protocol for this to not show up.
Yes.
That's a whole other topic.
It's why am I going to go out there and injure myself before I get a new contract? It's essentially what it is. The agents, the lawyers, they come in, they let the players know you need to protect yourself. Mickey Loomis, longtime Saints general manager, front office wizard, he says, look, the both sides of this negotiations, they're not that far apart.
I can tell you when we're a long ways apart. It's hard for me to tell you when we're close. I think we're close when I see the player in Kai's office with a document in front of him. Then I can tell you we're close. You know, I don't know the mindset of the other party. And, you know, they're going to find something they like. And at that point, we'll have something done. So,
Mickey was asked if it bothered him at all, if it upset him that his star wide receiver, Michael Thomas, better known as Camp Guard Mike, did not report to camp, that he's not there yesterday in Metairie.
It bothers me because look, it's a reflection on you know, the job that we do, and in a perfect world this would be done and we both feel either real good about it or both feel real bad about it.
And he'd be in here working. And look, I know Mike Thomas wants to be here, so it's not a question of him not wanting to be here.
So Mickey just telling you that, yeah, it bothers him that it's not there because it's a poor reflection on the franchise and the front office and how they do business. But he also admitted during yesterday's press conference that, look, this is what happens in negotiations between a team and player.
All these deals that are in the magnitude we're going to be ended up at, I think they're all, there's always, it's a negotiation. It's a lot of give and take. And then, ultimately, the urgency that you'd like to have happen in February, March, April, or May ends up getting dragged out to right before or during training camp. So I think it's just the nature of the business.
It is just the nature of the business. I firmly believe that Mickey will get this done. This will not be dragged out throughout training camp into throughout preseason. This will not be a situation that will be a huge distraction during the regular season. It's not how they operate. It's not how they get it done. Trust me, Drew Brees has already had a conversation with Mickey Loomis to make sure this gets done. And Mickey's like, yes, Drew. Okay, that's how that's going down. But a funny moment did occur yesterday, and everyone had a good chuckle based on this. The Cajun Cannon himself, Bobby Hebert, radio personality extraordinaire, father to radio personality T-Bob Hebert, asked Loomis about contract negotiations, and Mickey had to make sure to remind him.
Bobby, you're used to holdouts, so you have a lot of experience in that area. It's too late for you to get the answers, just so you know.
Too late for you to get the answers. I love that. Saints training camp, though, really kicks off today. Just a cool guy. Got the heart of a champion. Just a cool guy. That's right. It's Brandon Ingram, new star for the New Orleans Pelicans. It's part of the Anthony Davis trade. Talking during a little bit of an introductory press conference, one-on-one session that the Pels are having with all their new players. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7, The Game. Brandon Ingram. He is the huge question mark in that trade, without a doubt. He is the big question mark because, look, when they made the trade, they got a king's ransom. They did. Vice President of Basketball Operations David Griffin did a tremendous job trading away Anthony Davis and everything that he got in return. He gets three players under the age of 24 from the Lakers. That's one thing he does. Then he gets a draft pick, and then he flips that draft pick into more draft picks and was able to get more players. He essentially got a starting five and a bench player for Anthony Davis. Think of it that way. And future picks as well. But you look at the team that they're getting, the team that they're putting together, lots of potential. And in particular, the three guys that they got in the trade for Anthony Davis, Lonzo Ball, who we talked about on yesterday's show, Josh Hart, and Brandon Ingram. You know what you're going to get out of Josh Hart. He's a grinder, tough-nosed kid. Okay? Played at Villanova. National champion. Going to provide you some leadership. Tough. Easily kind of coachable. He's a perfect kind of coming off the bench guy. And that's where I envision Josh Hart's role with the Pels is that. He'll come in. Maybe he'll back up Lonzo Ball at the point. He could also come in and give Drew Holiday a breather. He's a pretty good defender. So he gives you some options there. You know what you're going to get out of Josh Hart. I have no questions. I think Josh Hart's going to fit perfectly in with what Alvin Gentry wants to do. He's going to fit in with that team. He's excited about being here. You saw it on the social media the whole time after the trade. He's embraced coming to New Orleans. Josh Hart will be fine. He'll fit right in. He'll be a very good rotational player. I said on yesterday's show that Lonzo Ball will thrive in New Orleans, and I firmly believe that. The spotlight will be off of him. He won't be under the big lights of playing for the glamour franchise that is the Los Angeles Lakers. There won't be as much media availability to his father to be a huge distraction and make Lonzo a polarizing figure. And they don't need him to be a volume shooter. They don't need him to be a 28-point-a-night point guard. He'll be able to play defense, which he does well. He'll be able to distribute the ball. And he'll be able to have some shots and attack the basket with playing alongside Drew Holiday and being able to throw alley-oops to the likes of Derek Favors, their center that they traded for from the Utah Jazz, and, of course, the big fella, the number one overall draft pick, Zion Williamson. Expect Lonzo to throw up a lot of dunks to Zion. That's going to be a Zion thing you're going to hear a lot on the Pelicans broadcast. So I know what I'm going to get out of Josh Hart. I'm confident that you're going to see the best version of Lonzo Ball here with the New Orleans Pelicans. I have questions, though, about Brandon Ingram. We've talked about Ingram's potential. NBA people have for years. They've talked about it and talked about it and talked about it and talked about it and talked about it. Brandon Ingram has all of this potential. What can he do with it? If you're going to do a trade with the Lakers, he was at the center of it. You got to get Brandon Ingram because of his potential. But I don't know what kind of player you're going to get. I have questions about Ingram. There are times where you watch him play, and man, you see it. You see that it factor. You see a star. But then it goes away. As quickly as you see it on the court, it goes away. Now, is this a case of a young man that has not been properly developed by an absolute dumpster fire of a front office and coaching staff that is the Los Angeles Lakers? I'd lean towards yes. Because we've seen two examples of two former players that the Lakers gave up on, young players that the Lakers gave up on, and see them thrive elsewhere. D'Angelo Russell becoming an all-star in Brooklyn and leading them to the playoffs. Now he's with the Golden State Warriors. Yeah. The most recent dynasty in the NBA thinks D'Angelo Russell is a valuable asset that they can help keep their dynasty and keep their streak going of dominating the Western Conference. And then we saw how good Julius Randle could be last year in New Orleans. He's moved on to the New York Knicks. Nearly a double-double. So is that what's happened with Brandon Ingram, that he just hasn't received what he's needed? Remember, this is a guy that was the second overall pick in the 2016 draft. He was second-team NBA All-Rookie, 6'9". He's a little skinny, 190 pounds. Was a star at Duke. Played for Coach K. Was an All-American, the ACC Rookie of the Year. This is a cat in high school that was a Parade All-American, McDonald's All-American. But in the pros, it just hasn't happened. You just haven't seen him play to his potential. He's been banged up a little bit. Had a sprained left ankle. And then he was ruled out for the remainder of this season, this past season, for deep vein thrombosis in his arm. A blood clot issue. So you got a young player that has not reached his potential. There's question marks on whether that's his own will, his own work ethic, the reason why he hasn't reached his potential? Or was it a lack of development by a dysfunction front office and coaching staff? Maybe a little bit of both. But those are question marks about him. You see the measurables. You see the wingspan. You see glimpses of just how good Brandon Ingram can be. He also has that health issue, the blood clots. That's kind of scary. He's been cleared to play, or he's going to be cleared to play. The Pels front office wouldn't have traded for him if they didn't think that he was going to play this season. But you look at the last couple years. He played only in the 52 games last year, but he averaged 33 minutes, 18 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. Those are good numbers. The year before, he played 59 games. He averaged about 33.5 points, 5 rebounds. That year, he averaged closer to 4 assists. Those are very solid numbers. Now, are those numbers that you expect from the number 2 overall pick and a guy coming out of Duke that was the number 2 overall pick? No. But those are still quality numbers. So you look at the stats, you see glimpses of his potential in games, and you go, wow, Brandon Ingram could be a star. But you still have the question marks. Does he have the will to be great? Will he accept coaching? Will he accept the development? What I think is going to help him is the situation he's going to. Because not only does Brandon Ingram not have to worry about this, neither does Lonzo Ball or Josh Hart. They're not the faces of the franchise. They're coming to a small market team, hungry for a winner, and they do not have to be the leader of the team, nor do they have to be the face of the franchise. The leader of the team is Drew Holiday. The face of the franchise is Zion Williamson. They can just come and play basketball. Not going to be hounded by reporters, not going to be hounded by paparazzi, not going to have to deal with that. Maybe that's what Brandon Ingram, a kid from the woods of North Carolina, needs. Maybe that's what he needs. Because he'll get to be able to come here and play for the Pels. Drew Holiday's going to be the leader. That's something they lacked immensely with the Los Angeles Lakers. They had no leadership there. They thrust those young guys, they draft those young guys, and they're like, okay, it's all up to you. And this is not a knock on LeBron James, but playing with LeBron James is tough. There's been very few players that have been able to maintain and play alongside with LeBron James. Most people have to play under LeBron James or for LeBron James. So if you're a young player that is dealing with confidence issues because of the way the front office and the coaching staff has been operating, and then you get LeBron James in Los Angeles, oh, come on, man. But they get to come to New Orleans, and in particularly for Brandon Ingram, he does not have to be the face. He does not have to be the savior. He does not have to be the leader. That's taken care of. And he can just go out on the court and play basketball with Lonzo and Drew and Zion and Derek Favors and go out there and just do his thing and play basketball and develop as a player. And I firmly believe that working with the likes of Derek Favors and then J.J. Redick, who they were able to sign in free agency, and Drew Holiday, those veterans are going to make a huge impact in how these younger players, and particularly the trio of guys that they got from the Lakers, is going to be a huge asset, and it's going to be a significant component of their development as players on and off the court. Do not be surprised if you see all three of those former Laker guys thrive in New Orleans. But the biggest one for me, the biggest question mark of the three, is Ingram. There's health, there's will, and there's, can he reach his potential? Because if he can reach his potential, the New Orleans Pelicans might have got a steal. Because if that guy can live up to his potential, He can be an all-star. He can be that kind of player. And then you're talking about having just a murderer's row starting five if that happens. We got to take a break to pay the bills. Got to keep the lights on. Just saying. When we come back, we'll close out this lovely first hour of the show right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Danny Etling, former LSU Tiger member. He was a transfer, right? Purdue, Cody, is that correct? Started off at Purdue and transferred into LSU, if I remember.
Fighting Drew Breeses.
Oh, that's right, the Fighting Drew Breeses. Danny Etling came in, gutty. Coach O loved him. Coach O, one Tiger, one heartbeat. Loved him some Danny Etling. Danny was a two-year starting quarterback for LSU. Ends up being a late-round draft pick of the New England Patriots. Got into some preseason action. And, of course, was on the roster. Danny Etling is a Super Bowl champion, ladies and gentlemen, as the New England Patriots' third-string quarterback, scout team quarterback.
Still counts.
Still counts. He still gets the hardware. That's all that matters. Etling still gets himself a ring. But, you know, New England is pretty set at the quarterback position. I got a guy, you may have heard of him. It's Tom Brady. He's pretty good. So, the Patriots are transitioning one of Brady's backups to a different position. That's right. Danny Etling, wide receiver now. The second-year player out of LSU switched from quarterback to wide receiver on Thursday. This is according to the mothership's Mike Reese. Etling was still wearing number 5 during Thursday's practice, but the color of his kit had changed from quarterback red, that means you can't hit them, to offensive player white, which means you can hit them. Etling said this, quote, "Everyone has a lot of different roles on this team, and I'm no exception. I'm excited to continue to keep trying to find a different role for myself and do whatever the coaches ask me to do," end quote. When you're a seventh-round pick and you're the third-string quarterback and the coaching staff comes to you and says, "Hey, we want to make you the next Julian Edelman," you say yes. You say yes. He didn't see a single regular season snap in his rookie season. Julian Edelman actually had more pass attempts than the rookie did. But back in the preseason last year, Etling stood out. Remember he had that memorable 86-yard touchdown run in the final preseason game? He didn't put up bad numbers, 20 of 38 for 178 yards, one touchdown and two picks, and 10 rushes for 120 yards and a score during his preseason appearances. But reports were coming out of New England that they were surprised by his athletic ability. And you know Bill Belichick, the hoodie, loves him some gadget players. One Patriot player suggested that Etling could play the role on New England, wait for it, that Saints Swiss Army man Taysom Hill plays for the Hoodats. They want to take Danny Etling and make him into their own version of Taysom Hill. The Patriots, your reigning Super Bowl champions, are looking to Sean Payton and the Saints for inspiration on what to do with a player. Taysom Hill fever is real, and now it's spread to New England. They're like, "Hey, you're an athletic white dude that used to be a quarterback. Boom, gadget player. Fit right in."
Is he fast like that, though? Because Taysom Hill is, like, really fast. Like, really, really fast. Like, usually one of the fastest dudes on the field.
I watched Danny Etling in college. I didn't seem to be that fast to me.
I'm not saying he's not tough. I'm not saying he's not a gritty player. I truly believe that he is. He's one of those, you know, grind it out kind of guys. But Taysom Hill's speed has a whole lot to do with his game, and I think Danny Etling lacks that.
This is what Philip Dorsett, wide receiver, had to say. Quote, We always knew Danny could play different positions. Always used to joke with him and call him Taysom Hill, end quote. Etling and Hill are kind of dead ringers physically, at least. Etling is 6'3", 220. Hill is 6'2", 221. They're built the same. Now, I've seen Taysom Hill play.
Who's faster? Like, you're skipping the important.
Taysom Hill.
It doesn't matter.
But you know what? I could see Bill Belichick being like, I don't care if you're fast. I mean, how many of these white dudes he takes and makes into slot wide receivers? Would you be surprised if Danny Etling caught 30 balls this year for the Patriots?
A little bit. I would honestly be a little bit. Not like, oh my goodness, but I'd be like, whoa, good for him.
We'll wrap up this hour this way. How many guys are going to take him in fantasy football drafts? Because you know that's going to happen.
Late round steal.
Oh, it's going to be the late round steal. You're going to hear someone proclaim it, and they're going to pump up their chest. And then when he's cut during preseason, that'll be great. So, best of luck to Danny Etling, former LSU Tiger, trying to make it as a wide receiver now with the New England Patriots. We got to hit a break, pay some bills. Coming up, rant of the week right here on 103.7 The Game at Canyon Sports Station.
Local. We are Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB Karen Crow Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ragin' Cajun hoop star Alfred Payton.
It's exciting to be able to represent, you know, your city, you know, somewhere where you grew up at and put that jersey on. See that says New Orleans on the front of it. I mean, it means a lot.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome back to the show. This is Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We spent the last hour talking who dats, New Orleans Saints. That's right, training camp began yesterday officially with players reporting. Sean Payton, Mickey Loomis talked about that extensively. Of course, a big topic of discussion was the fact that Michael Thomas was not there. I don't think that is a big deal at all. They'll get the deal done. This is just how negotiations work. Mickey Loomis and Michael Thomas will come to the table and sign that new contract extension. They're just waiting, in my opinion, on the Julio Jones Atlanta Falcons renegotiations to take place. That way they can set the bar where they need to be. Let's talk a little bit about Brandon Ingram getting an opportunity to show that he can finally live up to his massive potential as an NBA player now that he's playing for the New Orleans Pelicans. And, of course, Danny Etling. Oh, New England's version of Taysom Hill. That's what they're hoping for. Danny Etling, the former LSU quarterback, being moved to wide receiver. Coming up, we're going to talk more about training camp with the New Orleans Saints. They hit the ground running to date, so to speak, there at the training facility in Metairie. Players will be out there. There'll be some hidden. There'll be some helmets cracking. You get to see some plays. It's coming. The season's near. It's nearing every day. We'll talk more about that coming up at 7:32 with our boy Barry Hurstis of the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine. He'll join us talking all things Saints. But it's Friday, so that means it's time for me to provide you with my rant of the week.
Let me tell you something. You know what really grinds my gears?
Uh-oh. RP3 is ready to sound off.
Serenity now! Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
This is more than a complaint, but less than a tirade. This is Ray's Rant of the Week.
athletic departments are not responsible for making sure your library gets fixed. Period. There has been a lot of complaining, a lot of faux outrage over the LSU football operations facility. The new $28 million renovation project that was unveiled via social media, courtesy of LSU on Sunday, caused a bit of a firestorm regionally and then nationally. And then they had the ribbon cutting and tour on Wednesday. Yes, is the state-of-the-art facility with its massive cafeteria, with its LED lighting, with its virtual reality playbook, with state-of-the-art training recovery facility, with its NFL helmets in a hallway where you can even stand in front of a mannequin and it projects the current NFL players from LSU on there. All the bells and whistles. Is it a little over the top? Yeah, you're right. It is. Absolutely. Is it a little too much? Is it just like, do you really need to have a locker room that's not filled with real lockers and instead is filled with chairs that can become reclining beds, a la how would you fly in first class if you went overseas? Is it over the top? You betcha. Absolutely. It sure is. But this is big boy football. This is modern college athletics. It is an arms race, and you have to spend money if you want to get the best recruits in the nation. The days of guys coming and suiting up for your football team because of its tradition, because it won national championships in the 60s or 70s or 80s or 90s or even the early 2000s, the fact that you may have 2, 3, 4 Heisman Trophy winners, the fact that you've won 23 conference championships, they don't care. That's not even top three. If we still had the NCAA football video game and you were trying to recruit and you used to have to do your pitches and you'd sell them on coaching philosophy or playing time or tradition or whatever like that, tradition would not even be top three, guys. The modern athlete does not care about that. They care about playing time. They care about the technology, the look, the uniforms, the swag, and they care about getting to the NFL. Look at the best programs in college football, and that's what they do. The best programs in college football, that's what they do. They send guys to the NFL. They have state-of-the-art facilities that have all the technology, all the swag that goes along with it. And they do great at recruiting. Ohio State, Alabama, LSU, for a time, Oregon. Oregon built its program on that foundation. Oregon was a substandard program that had some glimpses of potential when Joey Harrington was back being the quarterback. But the program really took off and became a national brand, because it's all about the brand. It's not about tradition, it's about your brand. When Phil Knight, founder, head honcho of Nike, decided to invest millions upon millions upon millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars into the university, in particular into the athletic department, and they came out with the ridiculous uniforms. Sometimes they're neon. Sometimes they have 4 different types of neon colors in their uniform. The helmets, there was 18 different variations of a helmet throughout the season. They did all that, and people mocked them relentlessly for it. But it worked. Because kids responded to it. Kids responded to the fact that they had the cool uniforms, that they had the flashy uniforms and the flashy helmets, and they had the first to have the metallic helmet, the mirror-like helmet. It worked. And Oregon became a national brand. And Oregon started beating USC and Stanford and winning Pac-12 championships and playing for national championships. They had the bankroll to do it. They had the private donations from Knight to do that. And they figured out before anyone else did, you appeal to the kids. You have to adapt to the times, and they are changing. And what used to be important for kids is no longer important. And if you want to get the best athletes like Oregon did, they went into California and poached kids from California in USC's own backyard, you have to do that. And other places have followed suit. This is what LSU's doing. They were proactive, and they're like, we see this, and this is an opportunity for us to set the standard and to get guys excited. And is it any coincidence that while they're doing this, and they just unveiled their new football operation facility, that part of this last recruiting class and the upcoming recruiting class for 2020, they're poaching kids away from where? California, New York, New Jersey. They have something that no other program has in the nation now with the state-of-the-art $28 million renovation project to their facilities. And they're getting national prospects. They're not only just getting the best guys out of the state of Louisiana and some of the best out of the state of Texas and states of Mississippi. They're getting guys from coast to coast, just like Oregon did, just like Alabama's been doing. This is what it takes. This is what it takes. So the fact that former players like Patrick Peterson and Tyron Matthew and the TAF, the Tiger Athletic Foundation, was able to raise $28 million to make this happen, good for them. There should be no one out there that should be pissed off that this is happening. But yet, it happens every time. This is what's wrong with college athletics. This is the end of times. This is the apocalypse. What has happened to our beloved sport? I'm going to stop you right there. I'm going to have everyone slow their roll. College football and college athletics has been big business. It just didn't start in 2019, people. It's been that way my entire lifetime, and I've been on the face of this planet for 40 years. It's always been a big business. Teams have always done whatever they can, cutting-edge technology, cutting-edge methods, sometimes cutting around the edges, if you know what I mean, to get the best recruits to come and play for them. It's always been an arms race. We just know more about it now because of social media and the media attention that is focused on recruiting. So if you live in this time bubble, if you live in this snowflake-infused bubble where, oh, this is so terrible that these kids are doing this and that this program, wake up. Wake up. This is how business is done. This is how business has always been done. You've just been in the dark about it, and it hasn't been as flashy. This is what you have to do to remain relevant. And the fact that private donations were able to make this happen, no one should be upset about this. Whether you're a professor at LSU or you're concerned about the state of buildings on campus, yes. Are there buildings, are there facilities that are not athletic related on the campus of LSU that need dire repair, that are in embarrassing states? You're exactly correct, without a doubt. Got a little dirty secret, though, for you. You ready for it? Every college in this state that's part of the public system has the same problem. The same exact problem. There's not a university that is a public university in the state of Louisiana that doesn't have facilities that have decay, that doesn't have facilities that need improvement, that doesn't need money to improve their situation. Not a single one. Not at Louisiana Tech, not Northwestern State, not McNeese, not Southeastern, not Nichols, not Grambling, not Southern. All of them have the same issues that LSU have. So once again, wake the hell up there too. If you want to make sure that the schools in the state are taken care of, then do something with your local representative, your state reps. Have them make sure that there's proper funding for the state colleges. And then hold the state colleges accountable. Not the athletic department, not a private donor that decides to donate to their football program to install a facility. It ain't their responsibility to prop up a library. It ain't their responsibility to prop up the university. They do that anyway by giving them money every year based on their own profits. I'm tired of it. If you want the university to make sure the library is taken care of and other buildings are taken care of, then hold the president accountable, hold alumni accountable, and make sure it gets done. It's not the football player's responsibility to make sure that everyone else is taken care of. So stop bellyaching. I ran long there. I got a little animated. That's a week's worth of ranting coming out. We have to hit a break, pay a few bills, but when we come back, it'll be time for a far more pleasant and less angry segment of the show. RPOs with RP3. It's coming up next right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Blue poncho.
Shotgun formation. Cody snaps the questions.
Dre, 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 Dre.
And RP3 makes the reads. This is RPOs with RP3.
Blue poncho.
And we're back, RP3 and company, on a Friday morning, 20 minutes past the 7 o'clock hour. We're coming at you live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also on TV. You can check us out there. Channel 32.1, if you don't have cable, we're free over the air there. Or if you have LUS fiber, we're on channel 133. But if you got the HD option, we're on 1133 as well.
That's high definition.
That is high definition, which is better than standard definition.
Yes.
We are diving into RPOs with RP3 right now. Raymond, I'm going to set up a topic or three for you, and then I'm going to get your thoughts on it with your RPO choice. You're either going to run with it, you're going to pass on it, or you're going to take an option to wait till later to see how it works out. The first thing I want to bring up with you is the new LSU alcohol policy. It was released yesterday. You can click on a story at 1037thegame.com. All the info you may need is there. But let me run through the alcohol beverage policy with you real quick. The possession or consumption of alcohol not sold in the venue is expressly prohibited. So don't bring in outside booze. You will only be able to buy two alcoholic beverages at a time. So when you're at the counter, you can only get two before you got to go back to your seat. The beverages must remain and be poured into a cup. So there'll be no cans or bottles or anything like that. It'll all come.
And they're
going to
do that for you.
Correct.
Yeah, that's okay.
You're obviously going to need an ID for every time you go to the counter. There won't be like a wristband thing or anything. You're going to need your ID every time you go. Alcohol will not be served to fans who are visibly intoxicated. So compose yourself. Keep it together while waiting in line for your next beer. And finally, this is kind of an important one too. Alcohol sales will end at the end of the third quarter. We kind of knew that already, but there it is confirmed. End of the third quarter, no more alcohol being sold. And then it also states that if you're an idiot, they'll throw you out. They do it a little more professionally than that, but I'm not going to run through the whole spiel. If you're dumb and you're stupid, they're going to throw you out. Plain and simple. No refunds. No, you could be arrested possibly, and they will not let you back in possibly as well. So just a bad time if you act up at Tiger Stadium this next season. The biggest thing, though, from this whole alcohol policy is when they pointed out that there will be one area of the stadium that will not be selling alcohol. This may surprise you. Maybe it won't. But the concession stands nearest the student section at Tiger Stadium will not be selling beer and wine. RPO. That's a good idea.
Oh, I'm running with that. Have you been to Tiger Stadium as it is? Have you dealt with the student section that loves going along with the playing of Neck? They get rowdy as it is, and having the alcohol sales, some people think that's just like throwing a gallon of gasoline onto a large fire.
Fuel to the fire.
Right. I think it's a safe bet. That's why I run with it. You're going to make the student section, which a lot of those students aren't old enough to provide an ID to buy alcohol inside the stadium as it is. So you'll just have to make them walk a little bit. So that's their way of kind of reducing the fact. I mean, they would run out. If you did sell alcohol there by the student section, you'd run out. That'd be the one spot in Tiger Stadium that would run out by the end of the first quarter. So it's probably a good idea that they're not selling it at the nearest concession stand there by the student section. They're making the students have to walk a little bit. But if I'm at Tiger Stadium, I want to make sure that my seats are not by the nearest concession stand for the student section. That's not in their own section.
That's a bummer.
Look on the map and go, okay, well, they can't buy alcohol here, but they're going to go here. I want to make sure, can I swap my season tickets is what I want to do. But, yes, I'd run. I think that's a good idea. It's a sound idea. It's a safe idea.
Let's talk some Olympics real quick, Ray, because the Olympics are now officially, they are less than 1 year away. Earlier this week was marked the 1 year until Olympics 2020 in Tokyo. So a story has kind of popped back up this week regarding the new sports that will be competed in at the 2020 Olympics.
So the new sports that people will pretend to care about for like a two-month period, yeah, exactly. And then, okay, sorry.
For only one part of that 1 year. But yes, the new sports are karate, skateboarding, sports climbing, which I looked up is just rock climbing, and surfing are all going to be added to the 2020 Olympics. We'll also see the return of baseball / softball. It's not really a new sport, but they're coming back. So there's that as well.
Why RPO, they ever leave,
right? Which... RPO for me on those four extreme quote unquote sports, the karate, skateboarding, rock climbing, and surfing. They're joining the 2020 Olympics. You cool with that?
Run.
Yeah,
sure.
Why not?
If it gets more people to be invested into the Olympics, if it gets the younger generation to be invested into the Olympics, why not? I mean, I always thought karate probably already should have been. Martial arts should have
already
been.
Well, now we get to see Shaun White in the Summer Olympics as well. You don't have to just see him at the X Games or at the Winter Olympics. Now you get him at the Summer Olympics as well.
I mean, that's cool. I think it's a conscious effort to get younger, to appeal to the younger demographic.
Good idea. I think it's a conscious effort, but it's not one of those efforts that you see that it's like, this is futile. You're not going to accomplish it. I think this could accomplish some stuff.
I'm also happy that baseball, softball are back in.
Right. That's a huge deal for me as well. Rock climbing, though, I'm interested. Is it going to be done on like a gymnastic scoring type scale, or is it a race? I would like to know if it's a race. I could be really down to watch two people race up the side of a rock wall. What? Or up the side of a mountain or something? That's cool.
Are they going to incorporate that into a new Mission Impossible movie with Tom Cruise?
I'm sure it's already been done.
There we go.
I had another one for you about Steve Kerr, but we ran out of time. Steve Kerr's big mad about Anthony Davis going to the Lakers. Just know that.
Steve Kerr is opinionated. He's not afraid to say
no. He says that when you sign on the dotted line, and we don't have time to get into this, it's terrible, but if you sign on the dotted line with a team, then you owe that team, that city, and those fans your effort and your play for however many years. He says that players demanding trades before their contract is up is bad for the league, and it's a, quote, real problem. So you don't have time to dive into that.
I do not have a time. I do not have time to dive into that. He's not wrong, but it's also kind of an old school way of looking at things.
That's that.
So we'll option there.
It's similar to the Nick Saban's transfer portal thing. Like just subdue and divert. Like don't look at it.
Subdue and divert. I love it. Oh, that's going to do it for this edition of RPOs with RP3. When we come back after this commercial break, we'll have Barry Hurstis on. That's right, from the Saints News Network, Big Easy Magazine. He's going to tell us all about Saints training camp that kicks off today right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. You can find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We let off today's show talking all things New Orleans Saints training camp. Mickey Loomis, Sean Payton addressed the media, fielded questions as players reported yesterday. Of course, one was notably absent. Not that big of a deal. I'm sure our next guest will agree. We'll talk all things Saints training camp as we now head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He is the Saints beat writer for the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine. He joins us every Friday. It's our boy, Barry Hurstis. Barry, good morning to you, brother. How are you?
Good morning to you, sir. Your timing is impeccable because as soon as I get off this phone with you, I'm literally headed down there to the facility. So, because I only live 10 minutes away from where I'm at. So, I'm literally headed down there after this conversation. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
A little bit of a humble brag there from Barry. I just live 10 minutes away from the facility. Let's see what he did there. See what he did. I have access to whatever. I have my own golf cart. I can get access to Sean Payne, Mickey Loomis, whenever. That's fine. It's fine, Barry. You can brag.
That's
all that matters. Barry, let's start off with the look, we expected Michael Thomas not to show up because of the contract negotiations. This is a modern technique. Your thoughts on him not being there, and how long do you think it will take for the two sides to agree to a deal?
Basically, however long he doesn't want to practice. You know, I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. Let's just, you and I, because you and I, the great thing about our conversations every Friday is we just lay it out on the line. We don't try to sugarcoat anything. We don't try to fool anybody. Look, this kid is going to get paid. He's hands down a top five wide receiver in the NFL. If you caught anything yesterday on ESPN with those guys that cover NFL Live or whatever, I believe it was Lewis Riddick. Lewis Riddick needs to be Michael Thomas's agent because he laid out a perfect case as to why Michael Thomas deserves to be the – now, I'm not saying that Thomas will be the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL when his contract is negotiation is done, but he can be potentially. Yeah, I mean, think about it. He had 97 more receptions and nearly 1,000 more yards than the next closest Saints receiver to him statistically last year. That's mind-boggling. That means if you don't sign this guy, you have basically no passing game. And we all know the Saints would compensate. We all know that they would, but let's not kid ourselves here. If you don't have this guy on the field, you're not going, 13-3. You're not going to make the NFC playoffs. You barely might contend for a wild card. With this guy, you are a legit Super Bowl contender. So I hear a lot of this foolishness. Well, let's trade him and pay the lineman and pay Drew. No, folks, that's not how this works. Look, I get it. $22 million is a lot of money for a wide receiver. And we're used to hearing $22 million go to quarterbacks, you know. So when we start giving $22 million to wide receivers and stuff like I get it. It's we can't even grasp the amount of money that these guys are making. But let's just remember, we're in 2019 now. This isn't 1989. This isn't 1969. That's the going rate for these guys. So, and believe me when I tell you, the Saints know. They know they need Michael Thomas. So this is not going to be a big prolonged, drawn out. You know, it's all about how long this Michael, honestly, to me, and you see players do this every summer, how committed are they to wanting to practice? I mean, you know, they've been off for 6 months. I mean, yeah, they've been working out all, you know, throughout OTAs and minicamp and all that. And he's in phenomenal shape, trust me. It wouldn't kill him to miss a week or two of camp. It's not going to set him back. Now, if he sits out the whole month of August, then yeah, then obviously he's going to be a little rusty. He might not be ready for the start of the season. So he's only hurting himself, basically, the longer he holds out. But that said, I get it. I get his stance because he's got to take a stance. He's got to draw a line in the sand. It is what it is. There's no other way to sugarcoat it.
We're talking with Barry Erstis of the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Barry, with Michael Thomas holding out for as long as it takes to get his contract done, that gives a great opportunity to the other wide receivers. Who do you think can step up and show the coaches what they can do?
Well, obviously Traquan needs to step up. I know he's just a second year guy, but but he's the one that has to show. I mean, he's the one they spent the third round pick on. He's got to prove to the coaching staff that he's ready to take that next step. Don't sleep on a guy like Rishard Matthews. I know he was kind of late to the game, but you know he's an outstanding veteran experience. He's a great route runner. Would not shock me in the least to see Rishard Matthews sneak in there and grab the number five receiver spot. But to your point, and that was, I know I got long winded on the Michael Thomas thing, but that was what I was about to allude to next, was that by him holding out, there is one bright spot for this team, which is, as you allude to, it gives other guys a chance to get noticed. It gives other guys a chance to get better evaluated, because Thomas is not getting all the snaps or getting all the targets. And now you can truly, truly evaluate just how good or bad the receiving core is, behind Michael Thomas. I think they'll be fine. But I would love to see a guy like little Jordan Humphrey, their free agent, unrestricted free agent, undrafted rookie that they signed out of Texas. I think he has a shot. So it'll be intriguing to watch. And you never know. Every year in camp, there's always a name that stands out that you never expect. And I would say, along those lines, remember the name Cyril Grayson from LSU.
We're talking with Barry Herstis of the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Barry, is the signing of veteran Ziggy Hood just adding depth, or do you feel that the Saints believe there's a bigger concern with Sheldon Rankin's timetable for recovery?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think I said on Twitter yesterday, it was a camp body, when somebody asked me about it, I was just being bluntly as honest as I could. I really feel like Hood's good enough to make the roster and stick around. But I think it's more indicative of the fact that they just feel that Rankin's, it actually, to me, it sheds a little more light on Rankin's situation, because it shows that he's not there yet. He's recovering, but the recovery as they anticipated, as they told us. You know, I think we were all hoping that would heal a little quicker than anticipated. I know Alex Okafor, when he was with the team before he left, his Achilles healed up a little quicker than normal. And I think Saints fans on the optimistic side, we're hoping that things healed up and maybe we get Sheldon back in the first week of October. You can forget about that. I think at best we might see in week 9 or week 10.
We're talking with Barry Herstis of the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Barry, talk to me about the back end there of the defense, in particular the secondary. There's a lot of young, talented guys, but there's only so many spots out on the field. Is Patrick Robinson, coming off an injury, is he in danger of possibly losing his job as the projected nickel corner?
Absolutely, yes. And does that mean he will? No, but he certainly could lose it. And I'm telling you that Chauncey Gardner Johnson, I need to start calling him by his initials because I always ruin his name. That kid is legit. That kid is the real deal, man. And I'm telling you, you can move him all over the place, and I can very easily see him taking that spot. So, and then of course, don't rule out P.J. Williams. P.J. Williams played admirably in that role as well a few times last year. So, there's definitely going to be look, the cornerback competition to me is going to be just as exciting to watch. We know obviously that Lattimore and Apple will be two starters on the outside, but the slot corner position specifically, that is going to be a lot of fun to watch. And it to me, it rivals the wide receiver position as the one position that you can see a lot of turnover.
We're talking with Barry Herstis of the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Barry, the Saints have made a very much a strong effort to improve special teams by not only the players they re-signed by, but the guys they brought in through free agency and the guys that they drafted. They signed yet another guy who's known for his special teams just yesterday. What do you make of that move, and why are they so focused on special teams?
Well, because I just think because special teams can change the game. I mean, we've seen other teams in the past that, all it takes is that one punt return or that one, one team go down and score, and you get the ensuing kickoff. And look, if you just get it past midfield, bam, you're right back in scoring position. So that's something that the Saints have just been, let's face it, they've been quite woeful at that over the last year, pretty much since the beer man Michael Lewis retired. Or, I mean, you had Reggie Bush there for those couple of years, and Sproles did a little damage in his couple of years. But you haven't had that one guy, you know, you haven't had that Tyrone Hughes, that beer man. You haven't had that one guy that is all over the field, that can do it all, and especially in the kick punt return game. And that's just another prime example of why they're so adamant about focusing, because they want to be as solid in every phase and aspect of the game to be able to succeed. And you can't just do it on an offense and defense. You got to do it in all three phases. And I really think Sean Payton feels like they just weren't getting it done up to his standard the last few years. And that's why you've seen such a heavy emphasis on it this season.
We're talking with Barry Hurstis of the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Barry, how important is this training camp from start to finish in the preseason going to be for Teddy Bridgewater?
I don't think it's going to be as big of a deal as honestly is going to be the situation once you know. I feel like Teddy's going to be fine. The key to his situation is going to come next off season when they have to decide, you know, is Drew going to be here for another year or two, or is it time to turn over the reins to Teddy? And that's something I think that's not really going to play itself out until, you know, December, January, even February at the earliest. So, but as far as it being a critical camp for him, unless he gets hurt or regresses, I think he'll be fine.
Wrapping things up here with Barry Hurstis of the Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Barry, players will get after it today. They reported yesterday they'll hit the field today there at the training facility. What's the one thing or two things you're looking forward to the most that you're wanting to see on this official first day of training camp?
I just want to see the pace and the attitude. I want to see because that first day tends to be a little kind of a sluggish day. So I want to see how they respond, because as you and I have discussed all season throughout OTAs and the minicamp, they look sharp. They look focused. I've been telling you all spring and, you know, early summer long that they look like they're ready to play a game now, that they could tee it up now and play the Texans. I still feel that way. So I want to see if they're maintaining that same intensity. And so that's obviously the first thing. And I want to see, again, as we alluded to at the top of the segment, I want to see how these other young receivers specifically step up, because I anticipate Thomas is going to sit out at least a few days and probably bebop in there sometime next week, all casual, with a new contract in tow. These next few days in particular are going to be a chance for all these other wide receivers to shine. So I want to see which one of them is up to the challenge, because somebody's going to break out. It happens every year. So we'll see who it is this year.
Barry, appreciate your time as always, brother. Get out of the house. Take that exclusive New Orleans Saints golf cart path to the training facility that Mickey Loomis and Gail Benson have hooked you up with, obviously. But enjoy yourself, my friend. Enjoy yourself. We'll talk to you next week.
Yes, sir. I will do so, and I will keep you always. Just go to BigEasyMagazine.com or SaintsNewsNetwork.com, and you'll find the latest, my latest reports on this.
Thank you, Barry.
You got it, buddy.
It's Barry Hurstis, Saints News Network and Big Easy Magazine, joining us here on RP3 and Company. When we come back after these commercial break, after this commercial break, rather, we'll keep the Saints conversation going. We got a poll question for you. Woo! You're going to like it. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. Coming up at 8:32, Tyler Nunez, Tiger Rag. He'll give us his thoughts on the controversy surrounding the LSU football operations building, renovation project, all that good jazz. That'll be coming up at 8:32. But I want to close things out right here talking more about the Saints. Training camp is today. Players will get out there. They'll be getting after it. So Cody Schutz, what are some of the storylines? What are some of the things that you're needing to see, that you're intrigued by, rather, with the Saints heading into training camp? Is it the battle at wide receiver? Can Cam Meredith make this team, or is he going to get cut and never really play for the Saints? Are some of the rookies going to step up? Are you intrigued by the center position? Maybe it's the back end of the defense in the secondary. What are some things that you're intrigued by as the Saints officially kick off training camp today?
I mean, I think the two things, I don't even want to call either of them like my biggest concern, because I don't have major worries about either, but where my worries are, I suppose, would be that center position, because Max Unger is, in my opinion, a Hall of Famer. Mm. So to replace a guy like that is never going to be easy. So it's going to be very crucial to see who can step up and do the best they can. I don't expect either guy to be Max Unger, but to just step up and serve their role well. But the other thing that's curious to me is Marcus Davenport. He's got that body type. He's got that style. He's got the potential, I think, or as they say, the opposite usually. He's got the tangibles. We don't necessarily maybe know about his intangibles, but he's got the tangibles to be Michael Strahan type of guy, just to disrupt everything, run down, pass down. It doesn't matter. We saw flashes of it last year where there were certain plays here and there where he would just blow up his guy and he would be 5 yards in the backfield making a great play somewhere. I would love to see even more progression from Marcus Davenport, because if you can put a guy on that D-line and who can be disruptive on three downs, then that to me is so, so, so important in the NFL. And I think Marcus Davenport can be that guy, especially learning under guys like Cam Jordan and the such.
You kind of stole my thunder there a little bit, but I would agree with that. I'm interested to see what kind of camp Marcus Davenport has, because if the Saints want to get over the hump, they need him to play at a high level this year. That way Cam Jordan can stop being double-teamed on every single play. So, training camp opens up today officially there in Metairie at the Saints training facility. Be interesting to see. We have a poll question up on 1037thegame.com right now for you to vote in. Should Michael Thomas be the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL? We want your thoughts. We want your votes. So please go to 1037thegame.com right now and vote on our latest poll question. We'll update it throughout the rest of the show. When we come back here on RP3 in Company, we'll talk about the contract extension that's in the works for head coach Billy Napier.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 1037 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air sports coverage. And you can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We got our latest poll question up on 1037thegame.com right now. It's all about Michael Thomas, his contract situation. Should he be the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL? Should he be a top three highest paid wide receivers in the NFL? Or should he be a top five highest paid wide receiver in the NFL? Those are your options. You can go vote right now at 1037thegame.com. And we please ask you to vote early and often. Ha. But I want to talk about another contract situation. That's got nothing to do with the New Orleans Saints. It's about UL head football coach Billy Napier. Our friend Tim Buckley from the Daily Advertiser is reporting that a contract extension is in the works for the Raging Cajun head football coach, who's entering his second season at the helm of the program. Recap, last year, they had an up-and-down season, but they finished strong, won the Sun Belt Western Division title, played for the championship game against App State, and then played in the bowl game. Ended up winning 7 games overall for the season. A good start to his tenure there. They had an excellent recruiting class, the top-ranked recruiting class in all the Sun Belt Conference. They just locked that up. So the future's bright. They're establishing a new culture there with Billy Napier in charge. And they're already working on a 1-year contract extension is in the works for Napier, a source told Tim Buckley of the Daily Advertiser. Tim reports that the extension means Napier's current deal, originally a 5-year contract, which would run through the end of 2022, will now run through the end of 2023. The 1-year extension apparently was triggered by a clause in the contract that says, quote, parties may mutually agree in writing, end quote, quote, if after the first year of this contract, if UL athletic director or his designee determines coach has met all the annual performance targets after an annual evaluation. The performance targets are not specified, neither are the buyout terms for the new 6-year of the contract between Billy Napier and the University of Louisiana. Now, Napier's current contract went into effect on January 1st, 2018, and was valued at a little more than $750,000 guaranteed in the first year of the deal, including a $500,000 contingent premium benefit funded by the Raging Cajun Athletic Foundation, a $6,000 car allowance, and a $960 cell phone allowance. I want a little sidebar here. It's good to be a college football coach, Cody Schutz. That's a good gig. That's a very good gig. The contract calls for his base salary of $250,000 to increase by $25,000 in subsequent years through 2022. So he's got a raise built in from year to year of $25,000 to be the head football coach of the Raging Cajuns. Once again, UL went 7-7 in Billy's first year, made the Sun Belt Conference Championship game, and played in the Sun Belt affiliated Cure Bowl in Orlando. The Athletics' Bruce Feldman has reported this week on the Twitter that the extension was being finalized. So my question is this. What are the benefits of giving a head coach after just one season a contract extension? Can you tell enough out of 1 year what this coach is going to do, what he can do with the program? Is that enough? Obviously, Dr. Brian Maggard feels that it is. They wouldn't have agreed to the contract that they did, and now they're working on this 1-year extension. Look, if you're UL and you believe that Billy Napier is the right guy for your program and that last year is just the beginning and that it's going to lead to future success, it's going to lead to conference championships, it's going to lead to better and bigger bowl games and bowl game victories, then this is a smart move, right? You go ahead and lock him up. Get that extra year. Why not? If you're Billy, hey, you get even more job security. Add another year to your deal, which likely means a buyout, if they decide to part ways, would be even more for Billy Napier. Once again, securing his financial future. It makes sense from that perspective. But I guess my question, and if you'd like to give me your thoughts, call the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Do you feel that a one-year performance is enough to give someone an extension on their contract when they still have multiple years left? I don't know. I feel that Billy Napier is going to continue having success with the Raging Cajuns. I feel that. You look at the recruiting class they have. You look at the talent that they have. You look at the staff that he has, the highest paid staff in the Sun Belt Conference, coaches with a plethora of experience, including his defensive coordinator, who was an immensely successful head coach in his own right in Ron Roberts. But is 1 year enough in one great legendary recruiting class? Is that enough? Is that enough to warrant a contract extension? I don't know. I think Billy did good things in year one of his tenure. The fact that they were able to overcome some of those early setbacks, including that loss to Coastal Carolina, springs to mind. He finished strong. He wins the Sun Belt West, plays for the conference championship, plays in a bowl game. But if that field goal kicker for ULM makes that kick, things are totally different. They're not a 7-win team. They don't win the Sun Belt West. They probably still go to a bowl game. They would probably still go to a bowl game, but they could have very well ended up in the same boat that ULM did, that was bowl eligible but didn't get to a bowl because they were at 6 wins. The Cajuns and the Warhawks could have easily swapped places. That game last year put the Raging Cajuns into the Sun Belt Conference Championship game. They swapped places. So, as good of a season as it was for the Raging Cajuns, and it's a great foundation year. Anytime you can win 7 games, play for a conference championship, and play in a bowl game, that and being in your first year, that is tremendous. Make no mistake about it. But there's still room for improvement. And Billy Napier said so himself earlier this week at Sunbelt Media Day. That the way the season ended, the performance of his team in the conference championship game and in the bowl game, the more surprising of those two obviously was the bowl game against Tulane, that there's still work to be done, not only with his staff, but with the players. So I'll go back. Even though it makes sense to me that they're locking up and doing this contract extension and trying to get it done, is it necessary? I want to hear your thoughts. So please call the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Cody Schutz, your thoughts on this? Are you a little surprised that they're trying to do a contract extension after only 1 year?
No, because everything that you said is very valid about on-the-field things and how one or two other things could have happened and the season could have ended differently. I look at it as there are a lot of other things that go into being the head coach at UL or at any university that don't have anything to do with on the field stuff.
Okay.
Maybe Billy Napier is very, very good relationship wise with the president of the university and all that. Maybe he has this plan that we don't know about. Maybe he's got some kind of outline that he's shown the higher ups that this is my continued plan if I can have more time here. you know, maybe he's it's the recruit. The recruiting has been incredible. I mean, the recruiting has been through the window. So if you
look historic. Yeah.
So if you look at the recruiting, maybe they're basing some of their thoughts off of that. That if he can do this in just 1 year here, bringing in this kind of recruiting class, maybe the longer we keep him here, the better and better it can get. It doesn't necessarily surprise me. You know, you look at just on the field stuff, maybe it could be a little surprising, but I think if you try to factor in what other things Billy Napier does outside of Saturdays or Tuesdays or Thursdays, whenever UL ends up playing, if you take into account those other things that he does, I think it's a good shot that he's very, very, very good at those things, and maybe that factors into why so quickly they're looking to give him an extension.
Couple of things I want to elaborate on what you said. I agree with you. I think the recruiting plays a role in this, in the changing of the culture and the fact that he's leading the culture because they wanted a new identity for this football program following the departure of Hudspeth. Billy's different. He has a different approach. And it's all about culture and it's all about accountability. So I think Billy's done even a better job off the field, if that makes any sense, kind of to your point there, with the recruiting and with dealing with the president, dealing with the community, dealing with the RCAF. So it makes that makes sense, and the recruiting is historic. So, and also, let's be real for a moment. Adding a 1 year to his contract is not going to be that much of a difference maker moving forward. It's a sign of good faith, right? It's, hey, you did a great job. He probably exceeded everyone's expectations. Let's be honest, I think he did. I think he exceeded everyone's expectations last year and what he could do in year one, including inheriting a team that had a losing record the year before, right? So he takes over that. He gets them a winning season, first year, establishing his program, how he wants things ran, the whole nine yards. But the contract thing, look, if Billy builds this up, Cody, and say, let's say in the next 3 years, he wins a couple conference championships. Maybe in those next 3 years, he pulls off a win against a Power Five conference, an SEC team. A couple things are going to happen. One, they're going to restructure that deal, right? They're going to give him a new deal. They're going to rip up the old contract and try to make him even back up the Brinks truck to keep him there. Or two, a Power Five conference is going to come calling. Just like it's done in the Sun Belt this year, as you have App State and Troy both with new head coaches because Power Five schools came and said, here you go. Here's a bunch of money. We want you to take over our program and establish something great. So adding the one-year deal here may not be that significant because if Billy continues to build the Cajuns program, they're going to give him a whole new deal as it is, or someone's going to try to come in and poach him from a Power Five school. But still, step in the right direction. Everything's been positive. I know they had the setback in the conference championship game, the way they played, and definitely a setback on how the team played and was prepared for the bowl game. I heard from Raging Cajun fans, they were not happy about that performance. And Billy Napier is not happy the way how his team finished the year either, and neither are the players. But new culture, great recruiting class, highest paid staff in the Sun Belt Conference, laid a foundation with 7 wins. Keep that momentum going. I think this is part of that as well with Dr. Brian Maggard signing off, saying, hey, you did a great job. You exceeded our expectations. Here's an incentive. We're giving you a one-year contract extension, and let's keep this thing moving forward. It's all positive. I am a little surprised, though, it's happening after 1 year. But as Cody pointed out, why not, right? Why not go ahead and do this now? Because it could have more to do with what he's doing off the field and with recruiting than it does with his performance as the head coach his first season there with the Raging Cajuns. We got to hit a break and pay some of those bills. Got to keep the lights on. But when we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're going to talk a little Houston Astros baseball. Got some news to dive into right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. Let's talk a little Houston Astros baseball. They were off last night. They're gearing up for a three-game set starting tonight, though, at the St. Louis Cardinals. You can listen to all three games live right here on 103.7 The Game. We're going to take care of you because we are Acadiana's home for Houston Astros baseball. The good brother, Ben Love, will be hosting Bumper to Bumper Sports live from Murfino's on the River from 4 to 6:35. He's going to lead you right into Astro Launch pregame show. And then first pitch tonight will be at 7:15. Astros at Cardinals.
Come on, Astros. If I'm not normally rooting for the Astros, boy, am I this weekend.
Yes, he is. And then Saturday, Astros at Cardinals. Pregame will be 5:30, first pitch 6:15. And Sunday, Astros, Cardinals. Pregame 12:35, a little day baseball on Sunday. You can check it out after attending church. First pitch at 1:15. But when the Stros do take the field tonight in St. Louis, well, they'll have Carlos Carrera. That's right. Their all-star shortstop will be back in the lineup. We do not know yet in just what capacity he will be in yet, because he is coming off of the IL, as they now call it. And he suffered that rib injury when he was getting a massage at his house, which is still, I have questions. But he is expected to return to the lineup tonight. That's what the Houston Chronicle is reporting. Now, we don't know if it'll be a full night, if they'll leave him in the whole game or not. You would assume so. But unless he has some type of complication. But he took his final game of his minor league rehab assignment on Wednesday, and he'll be back in the lineup tonight. A.J. Hinch, the skipper, means he has the flexibility now in the field, and hopefully that his lineup will now be restored. He said, quote, "The versatility of where I can play guys and put them in the order is now incredible," end quote. Carrera was hitless Tuesday night. He entered Wednesday 6-for-19 with the Class AAA Round Rock Express. He missed 49 games with Houston because of a fractured rib suffered during a massage. In July, though, Houston leads the majors in OPS and ranks third in runs scored. And the Astros thrived without their roster at full strength. That include not having infielder Aldimus Diaz until he returned on Monday. Of course, Alvarez, the 21-year-old Cuban phenom, deserves a lot of the credit because he's been phenomenal since being called up. But with Carrera, makes things interesting. A.J. Hinch further stated, quote, "It's got a chance to get even better with Carlos coming back soon. Part of our calling card as an offense is continually putting pressure on every single at-bat," end quote. Carrera, before he got injured, was batting .295, had an OPS of .907, and he was been batting fourth or fifth in the lineup. We'll see where he puts him there. Maybe he starts off at three or the four spot tonight. We'll be interested to see how that goes down. Because now they got just a plethora of different power bats. You add Carrera, you got Michael Brantley, who's been knocking the hell out of the ball. Alvarez, who we already talked about. Yuli Gurriel. Altuve, Bregman. Springer, Dinger. Name me a weak spot in the lineup. There isn't one. And if they can just have Carlos be healthy the rest of the way, just fantastic. Here's an interesting step for you. By the way, to make room for Carrera, the team had to put Tony Kemp on waivers and send down rookie Miles Straw to make room for Carlos Carrera. But when Carrera returns Friday, the Astros will be whole for the first time since May the 10th. The team went 42-23 while Springer and or Altuve and or Carrera were on the IL. Wow. The team was still able to go 13-7 while all three were out at the same time.
That's almost winning every other game, or doubling your win total. That's not bad.
Those are three all-stars. They had three all-stars out, and they still went 13-7. And while a combination of Springer, Altuve out, and Altuve and Carrera out, they still went overall 42-23. And now they're healthy, and we're about to wrap up the month of July. Woo! Strohs are going to be dangerous down the stretch. I tell you who's dangerous. Our next guest from Tiger Rag, the one and only, Tyler Nunes will join us after this break. You're listening to Acadia Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadia Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free, over-the-air, 24-hour sports coverage. Okay? You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We got Tyler Nunes coming on shortly from Tiger Rag. He was there the other day, for the ribbon cutting ceremony and tour for the new football operations building, the $28 million renovation project that's caused such a controversy, such a stir, not only in the state, but for national media. He was there for that, got a glimpse of the new digs. And he also has his thoughts on the controversy itself. Is it warranted? He also has a perspective, being a former student at LSU, using the library that is in somewhat a decayed state. So Tyler brings a different perspective. He covers the football team. He knows the logistics there, but he's also a former student there on campus. So we're going to get that perspective from him as we head out to the ArtCo equipment hotline and welcome on our friend from Tiger Rag, the one and only, Tyler Nunes. Tyler, how you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, man. How are you guys?
I'm doing well. Let's get right to it. Your thoughts after you took the tour of the renovated football operations facility there on campus on Wednesday?
Well, I mean, if the goal is to bring in recruits and attract recruits and even attract more donors, then, it's going to do the job. It's a ridiculously impressive facility. I think what everyone came away talking about was the walkthrough room. They've got, like, five projectors connected on a big panorama wall with a fake football field, hash to hash, and right behind that is a film study room. So they can go and walk through with, like basically live computer-generated programs. And that's wild. Apparently only a few NFL teams have it. LSU is the first collegiate team to have it. It was Dave Aranda's baby, essentially. It was his idea, and, man, that's crazy. And then, of course, the locker room it's way roomier than I thought it would be. It kind of made a little bit more sense. And the way they said no pads kind of – I was worried it was going to smell in there, honestly. I was like, I don't know if anyone's going to want to sleep in there after a little bit. But the no pads are allowed in there. And it is a really nice space. I'm not sure if it qualifies as an actual locker room, but it is a very nice space for players to rest, watch film, do whatever they need to do before or after practice.
We're talking with Tyler Nunes of Tiger Rag right here on the ArtCo Equipment Hotline. Tyler, it was a star-studded event. Obviously, Coach Ed Orgeron was there, but Scott Woodward was there, athletic director, former athletic director Joe Oliva. Was there many members of the Tiger Athletic Foundation were on hand as well. What were some of the reaction? Yes. What was some of the reaction that you had interacting with maybe some of the people there with TAF and just other people on the university?
I think they're just excited. I mean, this is what they paid for, right? This is, or at least what they raised the money to pay for. So I think this is a labor of love. This is something that, I mean, look, if you look across the country, Texas has done this, Alabama has done this. It seems like every major college football program in the country is doing this at some point. This is LSU's turn. And I think it's an exciting time. I think I also really enjoyed how they paid homage to former LSU athletes. They have football jerseys with, like, plays, like being projected on them throughout the place. They've got an entire wall of all Americans. It's really cool. And I think that it's money well spent on the athletic side for sure.
The other thing that stood out to me to Tyler was that every single position room had like basically fat heads of all the former players, which I thought was a nice touch as well.
Yeah. Yeah, legends from every position, about four or five per position. And, yeah, and they went back all the way like to the beginning of LSU football, some of them.
So, yes. There were black and white fatheads, which I was like, okay, well, all right, that's nice. You're paying homage properly. Look, it's a sensational facility, state-of-the-art, is going to be a trend setter. And how surprising, though, is it for a university and athletic program, which in the past – has kind of dragged its feet on things, to fully embrace this and get this done now and be the leader of the pack instead of the follower?
I'm sorry, can you cut out? Can you repeat that?
I said, for LSU, which in the past has dragged its feet on things when it comes to improvements and embracing different things, how surprising is it that they are now the leader of the pack instead of being a follower?
I think this is kind of the result of playing it cool, sitting back and seeing what other people do, right? Because I think a lot of what they learned was there's a lot of extravagance that you can do that just really is a waste of money. I think they looked at Texas's locker room and saw 37-inch TVs over every locker, and they were like, we don't need that. We already give these kids iPads. They don't watch whatever we put on TV anyway. We can just, like, they can just watch whatever they want if we put a stand there, right? So I think what they did was they saw what people were doing. They took what they liked, and then they added their own spin as well, which is what we saw with the pods in the locker room. And I think it's a good use of space, most of it. I mean, there's obviously some gratuitous inclusions in there. The Tyrann Mathieu room has a VR racing simulator in there, which is pretty wild. But for the most part, as far as like functionality, it feels like every other part of that building has actual function for the players. And I think that's really what they were waiting on, seeing like, okay, we can waste money on a waterfall or a bunch of TVs, but instead we want to spend this money on a way that'll improve the players' lives on campus. And I think that's what they did.
We're talking with Tyler Nunez, a Tiger Rag, right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Tyler, I want to talk about the unveiling, and it caused a bit of a controversy or some outrage. Yeah. We can debate that, whether it was warranted or not. I want to start off, first off, with the local reaction there on the university. You are a former student of LSU, so you're still connected to that kind of life, even though you've been graduated for numerous years now. So I know the reaction was negative for just the basic students. Can you break that down for us, why they were so upset?
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, I really don't have a hard time blaming the students for looking across the street at these facilities and wondering what's going on, because a vast majority of them have their access is to buildings that are frankly falling apart in some ways. Lockett floods very easily. Middleton Library is in it's been in a sad state of affairs for about 20 years now, and with flooding recently, it's become even worse. There really is a lot of need for improvement on campus. So I don't blame them. At the same time, I don't think it's the athletic department's job to bail the university out. I think it kind of sets a dangerous precedent. And honestly, I don't even know that it's the donor's job to bail LSU out. I think the big part that a lot of people are missing here is that there's a state budget funding crisis, and that's kind of something that's kind of gone by the wayside, and nobody's really talking about that for whatever reason. But I don't think it's on LSU's former alumni to make sure that the library is in a good state of affairs. I think that should probably be the state's job.
We're talking with Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. I want to further elaborate a little bit on that, Tyler, because Professor Mann was critical, and then he kind of backtracked what he had to say. He said, you know, I'm over here having to vacuum my own office, and then people pointed out that he makes six figures and he only teaches one class. So was it a missed opportunity for those who have been trying to get things done at the library, instead of reacting negatively Could they have done a different approach, reacted positively, and tried to build off the momentum from this addition to try to get something done?
I think they could have. I think, unfortunately, the way the current internet works, they probably wouldn't have gotten as much pub. I hate to say that. It seems like that's kind of the way to get attention is to kind of throw stuff at it, throw negatives at it, get the attention, and then maybe backtrack and then start over. But I kind of wish it would have been handled a little bit different way, especially from I understood the students' concern. As far as professors, they should probably know better. They should probably know why these things aren't getting funded, and it's not the football team's fault, you know. But at the same time, I do understand the frustration whenever you do, again, you see a $30 million facility across the street and you have classrooms and libraries that are becoming unusable. That is a problem, and that's something that absolutely needs to be addressed. I'm just not sure that it's not the athletic department's job to address it.
We're talking with Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Tyler, there are projects that are being done. They recently had the business building that LSU and the state got done, and they made that happen.
The BEC and Patrick F. Taylor Hall are both world-class facilities, both great. The way that those were able to get done is half the funding was privately donated.
Okay.
And because you know, the people that graduate from those colleges tend to make a lot of money, or more money than other colleges on LSU's campus. So, places that are getting funded privately are getting fixed. Unfortunately, that means that the library isn't going to be a first priority if that's the way we're going to do things.
Tyler, this is nothing. This is not a phenomenon regulated to LSU, though, right? This is
no, absolutely not. I mean, LSU kind of has a unique like state budget problem, but other than that, no. I mean, I think that convincing people to donate to academic facilities is a little bit harder than convincing them to donate to world-class locker rooms that they can show off on Twitter, right? So I totally get it. It's absolutely not an LSU-specific problem, but it is something that does need to be addressed.
We're talking with Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag here on the ARCO Coleman Hotline. Tyler, then the conversation morphed nationally in particular about that players should be getting paid, and that's the direction that it got, because they said, well, if you can raise $28 million for an operations building, why can't you be paying players? And a lot of the national pundits jumped all over that. Your thoughts on how that narrative was created nationally concerning LSU?
Okay, I want to make it clear. I've been on the pay the players train for years now. For my entire professional career, I think that that framing is a little dishonest because they've raised $28 million once. It's not like they were raising and over a course of many years. So it's not like they were raising $28 million a year. They can't just go and pay like players $150,000 a pop or however much that would be. Now, that said, I do think that there's absolutely room for paying players. If we're being honest, some of like players across the country are getting paid already. So I think that there's absolutely room for that. I'm more of the let them sell their own name, let them brand themselves. That's kind of my avenue. My preferred avenue, it seems less complicated, and it would kind of keep parity somewhat alive, what's left of it currently. So I think the framing of that is a little dishonest, but at the same time, let these guys get paid. They earn so much money for the university, so much money for the communities, and yeah, they get access to these specific athletes get access to world-class facilities, but at a certain point, I think they'd probably rather take the cash.
We're wrapping things up here with Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Tyler, now that this is come and gone and the controversy will die out, it already is.
Yeah, for sure.
Fall camp is going to be here in less than a few weeks. What are you looking forward to most when camp begins?
I'm ready for football, man. It's football season. We've been waiting for a long time. It's been, almost 8 months now since the national championship. It's time. I'm ready to get out there, hear the clack of some pads, watch Joe Burrow throw some passes, see what Derek Stingley can do on the other side, and see what this new offense looks like. I think everyone's really curious about that. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It should be a really good season for LSU, and I'm looking forward to it.
Tyler, tell the people what you guys have coming up next at Tiger Rag. I know you're gearing up for the big season preview issue, but is there anything going to be online beforehand? What do you have coming up for the people to check out?
Yeah, absolutely. Keep out for our football issue. It hits the printers on Wednesday. We have a big event on August 1st. Go to TigerRag.com to check that out. Matt Flynn will be guest speaking. And I had a 30-minute one-on-one interview with Athletic Director Scott Woodward. There will be a feature in the coming week or so. So check out for that. There's some really interesting news in there. So, yeah, that should be everything. And, yeah, go to TigerRag.com. Sign up for our daily newsletter. You can get it sent straight to your email.
Perfect. Tyler, keep up the great work, man. I know putting together that fall issue is an absolute monster of a job. So yeah. I know you'll be sleeping well Wednesday after it goes to print finally.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, brother. Well, appreciate your time, man. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Y'all have a good one.
Tyler Nunes, Tiger Rag, joining us there on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, talking all things LSU and that football facility, giving some good perspective there. As a former LSU student, too. We got to hit our final commercial break. But when we come back, we will wrap up today's show and the week that was right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. It's a tremendous, tremendous week that was. We started things off at Sunbelt Media Day down in New Orleans. Had the likes of Billy Napier on, Brian Maggard, as well as several other coaches from the Sun Belt Conference. Then the week just kept rolling right along. Had great Pels talk with David Grubb on Tuesday, Jeff Palermo from Louisiana Radio Network, and Andrew Juge for the Saints. Then our boy Tim Buckley from the Daily Advertiser breaking down all things Raging Cajuns for us like he did and Ron Higgins on Wednesday. Yesterday was great as well. John Marcase, James Yasko from the Lima Time Time podcast, and Les East as well. And, of course, I want to thank our guest today, Barry Hurstis from the Saints News Network and Tyler Nunes from Tiger Rag. Cody Schutz, we had a poll question for the people. Won't you let the folks know what the poll question is, what their choices are, and give us an update on how the votes are going, my friend.
Oh, yes. I will oblige your request here, RP3. We asked you if the Saints wide receiver, Michael Thomas, should he be the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL? Should he be paid like a top three wide receiver? Or maybe should he be paid like a top five wide receiver? I decided not to put in the, less than a top five wide receiver, because that just invites the trolls to click that, because he is absolutely a top five wide receiver, no doubt about it. So far, we've got 60% of the vote. So the majority of the people are saying that he is a top three wide receiver, while then 20% say he should be the highest paid receiver in the NFL. The other 20%, that means they say that he should be paid like a top five wide receiver. So kind of some mixed results so far. We do have, because there is the link to that poll question on our Twitter feed at 103.7 The Game. You can check that out and click the link simply to go vote. We do have a response here on our tweet, though, from Kelly Broussard. He says, maybe when his current contract is finished, it would be interesting to see some alternate universe where the quarterback throwing the ball to Michael Thomas was more like Blake Bortles than Drew Brees. Kelly says he highly doubts that Thomas would have the numbers to ask for that kind of money in that situation.
I want to discuss that.
It's a fun what-if scenario.
It is a fun what-if scenario, because that goes back to some of the Saints, the greatest wide receivers in Saints history. Who's better, Joe Horn or Marcus Colston?
You can make an argument for either one because of their quarterback.
Correct. You can make the argument that Joe Horn was better, actually went to multiple Pro Bowls. Marcus Colston never did.
Joe Horn had the ball thrown to him by Aaron Brooks,
who perfected the backwards pass.
And then laughing about it.
Perfected the back. Joe Horn had Aaron Brooks, Jeff Blake, and Todd Bauman throwing him the ball for the majority of his
Mark
career.
Mark Brunell in there somewhere, too?
I don't know. Maybe. And Jeff George was beating around the bush.
And to think that whole time there was a dude hanging out on the bench that would eventually make a run to the Super Bowl.
Oh, my God. Just terrible. Just awful. Just awful. But Broussard kind of makes a good point. But then, Marcus Colston, he was great. And here's the other thing. yes, you have a Hall of Famer throwing you the ball, but my rebuttal is you still have to catch the ball, right? Drew Brees can throw the passes all day long he wants, but you still have to go out there and catch it. And we saw what Michael Thomas did a lot last year, and he was able to get in position where Drew maybe not doesn't have the zip like he used to, and he still was catching Drew Brees passes. So I would pay Michael Thomas as a top five wide receiver.
I would pay him as the top three.
I think he's bordering on top three, but top five. Okay? That's how I fall down on that. But interesting point, though.
I do want to point out real quickly here, Rick Ross and Drake, you know, we love Rick Ross here, just dropped a new single together called Gold Roses. Go check that out.
Of course they did. Of course they did. Oh, man. Hey, reminder, go check out Gino Della Fosse for the original Swamp and Roll music TV show taped live at Black Gold Casino in Doosan at 7 o'clock next Wednesday. Great show. Y'all have a terrific weekend. Keep it live and local right here on 103.7 The Game.